Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Nobody actually knows how high his rate of support is, including Putin himself.
Hello and welcome to Free Exchange. I'm John Ashmore, the editor of CapEx, and a very happy new year to all our listeners. Whether it's interfering in Syria, Venezuela or Iran, Vladimir Putin is rarely out of the headlines. But what's life like for the opposition activists trying to take the fight to the Russian president on his home turf? To find out, I sat down with Vera Kichanova, who has the distinction of being the first libertarian ever elected to public office in Russia in Moscow's municipal elections back in 2012. She subsequently spent several years working on economic reform in Ukraine and is now doing urban policy research here in London. She began our conversation by explaining how family history has helped shape her anti-authoritarian outlook.
I've always been, concerned about what was going on in Russia. That certainly comes from my parents, who were always, liberal Democrats by their views. So they were rallying against the communist regime during the perestroika times, and Putin came to power, they were quite suspicious of him, and especially my father, because my mother didn't want me to be politically active. They realized it's dangerous in Russia, but my father was from time to time discussing with me the situation. So I've always been concerned, and at some point, I don't even remember what was the final trigger, but I realized that it's time to be more active. And I started going to the rallies, going to some student meetups dedicated to political situation. So I became part of this broader umbrella opposition movement, because it's sometimes hard to explain to the outsiders, but in authoritarian organizations, the ideological differences, they do not matter that much. So you can see if you see these big rallies in Moscow, you can see the libertarian flags next to the red flags, next to the nationalist flags.
Yeah, so libertarians and communists unite.
Yes, because we are fighting for the institutional change. So we will all benefit if we have a democratic society, if we'll have a independent election, free elections, and the real parliament is a place for proper discussion. So we would rather fight each other in the parliament than on Facebook, because if we fight each other on Facebook, that can last forever until they shut down Facebook, which they certainly can do. So, and I was interacting with meeting people among the protesters with various views, and at some point I met libertarians and I realized that this is more or less the ideas I've always shared without knowing what it's called. And then I joined the Libertarian Party. It was almost 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's fair to say that free market sort of philosophy hasn't always had a particularly big audience in Russia.
But you know what? Actually, I wouldn't agree, because it's not just my own observation. I've heard it from people like the Liberty Champions, who are traveling a lot, like Tom Palmer from Atlas Network, or Lawrence Reed, or Yaron Brook, head of the Ayn Rand Institute, that the most brave and dedicated fighters for liberty can be found in countries that lived under communist regimes. So there are a lot of us in Eastern Europe, a lot of us in Latin America. So, for example, I know quite a few Venezuelan activists, and they are the bravest people I ever met.
Yeah, I mean, we had a guest on this podcast not long ago who was arrested, Boris Arenas Gonzalez, and he was arrested by the Cuban security services about 2 weeks after he came on the podcast. So, you can see the bravery of people who work in these kind of totalitarian regimes. Mm. Now, you spoke there about the opposition, and you used the word, it's an umbrella movement. But, I mean, do you think it's fair to say there are two oppositions in Russia, in the sense that there's a kind of fake Kremlin opposition?
Absolutely.
And then there's the real one.
I didn't even mention it because no one considers them opposition anymore.
Right.
So, for example, today it leaked in the Russian media that the Kremlin is planning to create the new fake liberal party for the next parliament elections, but they're doing it every 4 years before every elections, and it's always more or less the same faces, the usual suspects who are involved, and it only works, I don't know, every time it's less and less.
It works,
yes.
Yeah, it's more obvious every time.
It's more obvious. So it still works for the outsider, for the foreign media, for example, like last presidential elections, they had Ksenia Sobchak to represent the liberal wing, which her father was Putin's boss.
So this is, just for our listeners who might not know, her dad used to be the mayor of Moscow.
Yeah, the mayor of St. Petersburg.
Of St. Petersburg, sorry.
Because Putin comes from St. Petersburg, so she always had access to Putin's family and kind of, but she had that image of a young, smart, self-made woman.
Yeah.
It was annoying seeing the new, articles in the Western media saying that this time Russia has a liberal candidate for president.
It's amazing some of the things you see from so-called Russia experts on Twitter and so on. How do you think that the Western coverage of Russia in general is in terms of quality and understanding?
Oh, that's a good question, because I can't say for all the media, because it's been it's been in the spotlight for the last, let's say 5 years. It's been such a overheated topic, everything that's going on in Russia. So there's a lot of both good reporting and a lot of nonsense. So I remember when I first moved to London and I went to Waterstones and I saw the shelf with the most best-selling books, and half of them were about Russia. Something about the Russian corruption, the Russian oligarchs, the Kremlin, the Russian Revolution. And I have very mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I think this is very important, what's going on in Russia, not just because I come from Russia, but because it influences not only Europe. You can see what's going on in Venezuela now. It's like, without Putin's support, the situation could have been different.
Yeah.
And so it's really, the authoritarianism in Russia has, and the Putin who is viewed as a role model by all the authoritarian leaders worldwide. But on the other hand, so I was thinking it's good that everyone's talking about Russia and acknowledge the problem. But on the other hand, that's exactly what Putin wants when he's doing it, because he loves when the world is seeing him as the biggest threat, as the kind of the general of this army for, I don't know, against the what they would call the liberal order, like the protector of traditional values, all these things. So
yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Venezuela there. I mean, there's this whole slightly under the radar foreign operation that the Kremlin conducts. I'm thinking, we know about Syria, but also in Africa, in various countries, the Central African Republic. I mean, what do you see as the purpose from, what does Putin gain from having these little kind of micro states that, well, not micro states, but, you know, these regimes that are loyal to him?
Well, as I said, he likes feeling like he's a world leader, because he's not, I mean, he sees the world as a zero-sum game. He cannot impress everyone by the good, like, economic prosperity of his country, but he can play the role of a moral leader. So he likes it the more. He likes being influential. And this is, again, one of the things that I think is very important to understand about Putin, that he's unfortunately quite a clever man. So he knows how to address how to target every audience, every piece of how to target different groups. So if you can see, he is supporting both, I don't know, the left-wing, radical right-wing parties and movements in Europe and elsewhere, and sometimes in the same country, like in Germany. Kremlin has ties both with Die Linke, the radical left, and Pegida, the radical right. In Spain, when during the Catalonia referendum, the Kremlin bots, as it was discovered, backed both sides. So it's about destabilizing the situation. It's not about... But the thing is that many of these groups think that he genuinely shares their values. So the right-wing people think that he's a champion of traditional values, of Christianity, a fighter against Islamism or whatever. The left-wing people think that he's the one who carries on the communist flag and wants to restore the Soviet Union. And unfortunately, I see this, there are some libertarians who believe that he is a person to praise because he's kind of opposing America, which is seen as, I don't know, because Russia today gives platform to people like Ron Paul and others. So just because the enemy of my enemy is my friend, as they think, because Russia today criticizes legitimately criticizes some misdeeds by the Western governments. They think that everything else they're reporting about Russia is also true.
Mm. I mean, so it's obvious that he is something of a master of the kind of geopolitical game. But how do you think he is perceived by normal Russians now, 20 years or so in? Because obviously, he wins elections by sort of 75% or something, but there's obviously a lot of, questions over the legitimacy of those. And do you think there's a section of Russian population that has just switched off and they just think, oh, this is the political world, it's got nothing to do with me?
This is a very interesting question, and another thing that a lot of people in the West don't really get, that nobody actually knows how high his rate of support is, including Putin himself, because in an authoritarian country, when you destroy all the means of feedback, you kind of create a trap that you fall into yourself, because there's no independent elections, there's no independent media, and there's no independent polling, and everyone's too afraid to say what they think. Well, not everyone, but most people. And as you said, indeed, I think most people, they treat the politics more like weather. Just happens,
and we have to
adapt to it.
Yeah.
And it's really not it's not nice to us, but that's the country we live in. That's the country when we have cold winter and
a czar
and an authoritarian ruler.
Right.
So he had a huge spike of support after the annexation of the Crimea, but it has not entirely vanished, but really, really fall down, because you cannot just... because it created... There were very, very bad consequences for the Russian economy.
Yeah.
The sanctions, the fall of the Russian currency, the outflow of investments, and all these things,
They put pressure on normal people.
They put pressure, so... Now he's playing another card, it's the card he's always been playing, but now it's his main card that, I might be not an ideal ruler, but everyone else is, any other politician coming to power would be a disaster.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't been watching the Russian federal TV channels for 10 years, I guess. But last weekend I was visiting my parents and the TV was on, and I saw that the news, it would be all about some catastrophic things going on everywhere else in the world, especially in the democratic countries, like a flood somewhere in Europe or an earthquake somewhere in America, especially if something happens in Ukraine, this will be the number one news. And if at the same time there is a fire in Russia with 40 people 140 people die, that wouldn't be in the main news.
So they're literally, Russians are just seeing a kind of alternative reality to most of the rest.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, I occasionally talk to Russian friends of mine. I lived there for a while, and they'll say things like, oh, I saw a report on the news about how France is being invaded by Africans and stuff like this. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? It's really bizarre. But I mean, I think it's hard for us to compute how complete the control of the media.
Yes, and that's, again, the problem. Sometimes when I just moved out of Russia, I moved to Kyiv, and it was right after the Euromaidan revolution. I moved there to work with a team of reformers. And although my father grew up in Ukraine and his parents live in Ukraine and my mother's grandparents all come from, so I'm half Ukrainian. I have very, like, a lot of Ukrainian blood. And so they were, like, they've both been to Ukraine many times, but they still believe. He wouldn't call his parents to ask what's going on. He wouldn't call me. He would watch the TV and he would call me and say, oh, this is something dangerous happening. So whenever, I don't know, there's a minor, I don't know, it was here in London. I remember there was some rocket that exploded during some street party. And my parents called me asking if there's a terror attack in London and if I'm safe.
Yeah, watch out. November the 5th is a very, very dangerous time to be in London. It's crazy. It's what the other thing you always see with Ukraine coverage is that anyone involved in anything that they sort of deem anti-Russian is described as like a neo-fascist or Nazi sometimes. Yeah.
That's why now they have the president who's a Jewish person, the head of the parliament. I don't remember. It was the previous head of the parliament who was also a Jewish person. Obviously, in a fascist state, it's...
Yeah, very strange kind of Nazis they have in Ukraine. I mean, we talked about the kind of popularity ratings of Putin. But as you say, ordinary Russians' living standards, having done pretty well in the first decade of this century.
Yes, that's right. And this is a very interesting thing a very important thing to mention, that when Putin just came to power, he kind of saw people like Lee Kuan Yew or maybe Pinochet as his role models. Like, he wanted to create a free economy with a tightly controlled political life. That's how he envisioned Russia. But in the very beginning, he was very pragmatic about reform, like free market, doing real free market reforms.
Yeah. So and he cut the income tax rate to 13%, right?
And made it flat. And it's still flat and 13%.
Yeah.
That was the main reform. But there were others as well. They removed... So he hired a team of free market reformers who were responsible for all these things. So I know this very well because my husband is one of them.
Ah. from the horse's mouth.
Yeah,
okay.
And the other one is a man who is working in the Cato Institute now, Andrei Larionov, also a big expert on Russia and a very fierce critic of Putin. So the income tax, a lot of deregulations, a lot of taxes removed, the stabilization fund, a lot of other like smaller but also important changes. And together with a very favorable oil price, it really led to the economic boom in Russia. So it was the decade from 2001 to 2010, like a decade that was where Russia was growing and everyone was satisfied, and there was very little opposition to Putin. There was some because he was an authoritarian leader, and one of the first things he did was not lowering the tax. It was shutting down the most popular independent TV channel,
NTV. Right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. So people who were aware, they would protest, but it was impossible to imagine some mass dissent. But yes, this changed in, so you probably know, 2011, suddenly people were, hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets protesting against the rigged elections. And that was a huge surprise both for Putin and for the opposition. Because this first decade of Putin, it was kind of an not an explicit, but a social contract. Like, yes. We are... Like,
you be
we
quiet give, and you'll yes, get rich, basically.
You be quiet and you will get richer. We will get even more richer. We will be stealing, but you won't mind as soon as we... And the idea was to... Like, they were... The government, they were kind of promoting this idea that we are creating the middle class in Russia, finally. And indeed, the new class... was created, like the middle class, urban, educated, some of them well-traveled because they got enough money. And suddenly this new class realized that they don't like the conditions of this social contract anymore. And Putin saw it as a betrayal, and everything that he was doing since then was kind of targeting these people who are open-minded, globally minded.
Yeah.
So all this, he didn't care before that. He didn't care about controlling the social life. So he would control the media because that would threaten his corruption schemes. But he wouldn't care about, I don't know, LGBT people or religious internet, I don't know what they call extremism online or controlling internet. And so that was kind of a revenge as we see it.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I mean, you mentioned the massive theft that's gone on. I mean, some estimates have Putin as the world's richest man. I mean, how much do you think... Obviously, you know, you and other opposition activists know about this, but do you think that the man on the street in Russia generally is aware that the
government this is the
is
thing
robbing
they're aware.
Them blind?
They might be not aware that and deny the fact that he's an authoritarian leader, but they all know about corruption. So it's an open secret. Like, even on the state-owned channels,
Do they know quite how much?
The stand-up comedians joke about it. Everyone knows about it, but it's just a different mentality, like because we can mentality. So it's almost, I don't know, it's kind of a feudalist approach. Like, if my master is so powerful and so rich, then kind of. But the idea is, yes, we can. Like, we can.
Yeah.
We can do it. People might get very angry about lower level
bribes and things like this. Yeah.
Government officials. So whenever something gets really bad, he can fire someone and kind of channel the discontent. So it's always like this idea that if something goes wrong, it's because Putin is not aware of it. No one reported to him. He just cannot micromanage everything. He's the only true people. He's the only person in the country who truly cares for the country. So he has too much stuff to do.
Right. You've heard these tropes throughout Russian history about leaders being betrayed by people and not knowing them. It's sort of the circularity of it. From your point of view as someone who's been an activist against Putin, how do you assess the likelihood of someone making real political progress against his government, getting a different government in. I mean, Neo, what timescale are we talking about?
Nobody knows. Indeed, it's definitely a marathon, not a sprint. So this, we didn't realize it back in 2012, but we realize it now. So I wrote about it in my article for CapEx.
Which is very good, by the way. Everyone should read that.
Thank you. There were very big protests in Moscow, which were sparked out of all things by municipal elections, which nobody had ever cared about in the previous years. So it was a sign that only a spark is needed, that people are so, and at least in Moscow, in the big cities, they are so angry. So it wasn't really about municipal elections. And so the people who were running and who were banned from the opposition candidates, they are very decent people and they have their support, but they are not like stars. It wasn't about their personalities. It wasn't about the elections. It was about everything that's been happening in the last few years, that the government, all the government failures, from like environmental disasters to forest fires to the sanctions to the what else, like a lot of things were just happening and happening, and there was no reaction, and now I see it that partially because of the Crimea issue, that, as I said, the opposition movement was an umbrella movement when I joined it 10 years ago. It's not as much anymore, because large part of the opposition movement suddenly they were happy about the annexation of Crimea. I mean, the more nationalist or communist part. Because for the communists, it was the first step to restore the Soviet Union. For the nationalists, it's like we are the big superpower. So most of the opposition is now on the liberal wing. So all sort of liberal parties, so from social democrats to us libertarians. And so they are much more united. They are much more, they're much better in working together. They are much better. So we all, for example, understand, and I understood it very well after Ukraine. That was the reason why I moved to Kiev, because I wanted to see with my own eyes what happens when a country gets a revolution for freedom, and then it needs reforms, and what should be done. And unfortunately, I mean, not everything that could have been done was done in Ukraine, partially, mainly because there was no team with a program, and this is what we understand we need now. So a lot of efforts are put into preparing a program that would be put on the table until something changes. Yeah. So this is one of the things that we're doing. And yeah, we realize that it's okay, we cannot register our party, for example. So we still consider it a legitimate party, because we have... I just went to Moscow for the Libertarian Party convention. We had 48 regions represented, 150 people from almost 50 regions all over Russia. So it's a huge one. It's now, I think, one of the two biggest opposition forces in Russia, together with Alexei Navalny's movement. And we cannot participate in elections as a party, but we can build some grassroots networks. We can run, like, I was the first libertarian ever elected in Russia, but...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Not the only one. So it was, after me, there were other people.
Yeah. So, and the day we're recording this, I should add, a member of Vera's party has been arrested by the Russian, they call them something like the Federal Investigative Bureau.
That's right.
On Trumped-up charges.
To say about it. So. Yeah, Mikhail Svetov, one of our most prominent activists, he was accused of sexual misconduct.
I mean, and they always do this.
And he was interrogated for 12 hours yesterday.
Yeah.
12 hours in a row. And So he's now, he had his house searched and his computer, his laptop seized. And we all, everyone understands it's about his political activity, and it's a response, like the government's response to the fact that libertarians are now the biggest force, that we were the drivers behind the rallies last summer, yeah. And that we had this convention that was successful. So everything that's their reaction to political opponents.
I mean, how do you feel then about, you mentioned Ukraine, obviously you have a lot of family there, you're half Ukrainian. Yeah. Are you optimistic about the future of Ukraine, a very liberalizing government there that seems to have a fairly economically liberal prospectus?
Well, I'm not as much optimistic about economic reforms, but I'm very much optimistic about the political and the ideological shift. This is something that's irreversible. The decommunization that was started after the Euromaidan and the overall rejection of the Soviet past and the Euromaidan was about, it's called Euromaidan, it was about becoming part of Europe, if not legally, at least ideologically. So they understand in Ukraine that there is a choice. Either you go back to the Soviet Union or you become part of the democratic world. So this is a lot of things. I lived there for two years, and it was in my first article for CapEx.
So, also excellent, by the way.
Thank you. It was a few years ago, so my first impressions.
So just search Vera CapEx, and you'll find her pieces.
Yes, yeah, so it will take me a lot of time to list all the improvements that I saw. So economically, this is, like, it's not Georgia. So in Georgia was a small country, and again, maybe most people don't know about it outside of the post-Soviet world, but it went through the most successful free market reforms, maybe in the world in the last 15 years. But there is a small country, and it was done very fast and very efficient, and they had a brilliant team. And this in Ukraine, they're trying to replicate it. So a lot of experts from countries that had gone through successful reforms went to Ukraine to work as experts, from Lithuania, from Poland, from Slovakia, from Georgia. And it had some impact. But this is a problem. Then in terms of social liberties, the battle is won completely. In terms of economic liberties, there's still, like, populism is still kind of prevailing, but we're working on it. My friends from Students for Liberty, from Bedukidze Free Market Center, from a number of Easy Business, another organization, a number of think tanks and charities are working on that. So the recent initiative was they developed a textbook on economics for middle school students. Nice things have been done,
right.
And I'm optimistic.
So we will keep on fighting the good fight in Ukraine. Well, Vera, thank you so much for joining us. It's been absolutely fascinating. And hopefully we'll see even more of your articles on CapEx in the future.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.